You're listening to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time on SQPN.com, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way. This episode is brought to you by Bluehost. Create your own website or blog with a .com domain name for just $6.95 per month. Go to SQPN.com and click on the Bluehost banner for more information. And by the Amazon Store. Shop at Amazon by clicking on our Amazon link at SQPN.com, and your purchase will help support our show. Hello and welcome to the very first episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. The show currently on ABC, it's doing very, very well, and it's a show that we love to do a show about, actually. It's a TV series with, I think, a huge potential, TV-wise, but also story-wise. And joining me today on the show to talk about Once Upon a Time are two esteemed guests. And let me start with the lady first, of course, Lisa Jones. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Lisa, tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are you and what do you do?
I live just outside of Houston, Texas, in a suburb called Missouri City. And I currently am a stay-at-home mom to three elementary-age kids. And in my spare time, when I'm not shuttling them around, I write a blog with my sister called Sound Mind and Spirit that focuses on our Catholic faith, conservative politics, and a lot about family life and being a mom.
Well, this being a family show, Once Upon a Time, I'd love to hear your opinion as a mom of and as a parent about the stories and about the themes in there. So I'm looking forward to that. Also joining us is David Handless. Hey, David, how are you doing?
Doing great, Father.
Good to have you on the show. David is actually a co-host of another podcast that I do together with him about Tintin. And for those of you that are not familiar with that character, that is a very famous European comic book character. He's a young reporter. And in December, there will be a movie in the United States, an animated movie made by Steven Spielberg and Peter Jackson. And it's going to tell you all about that young reporter from Belgium. But we are already doing a show about him and about his about the comic books dedicated to him. But David, you are also a fan of Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, this is a show that both me and my wife got into. We actually about a week and a half ago, we just kind of stumbled upon it on Hulu and got sucked in. And this show covers pretty much every fairy tale character we've ever heard of. So even after the show's done, we're talking about it.
It is. It's an amazing show. I discovered it. By the way, I forget to introduce myself. I'm Father Roderick. I'm the CEO of a podcasting platform called SQPN. Stands for the Star Quest Production Network. What's that sound? That is weird. Is someone eating something?
No.
Was that you?
No, I don't know what that is.
Is that you, Lisa?
No. I'm locked in the closet, away from the kids.
Strange. Oh, we've got our first mystery of the show. Where is this sound coming from? Anyway, I've been podcasting since forever. I think since the dawn of podcasting, I've been doing shows. And one of my favorite topics to talk about are stories, movies, fairy tales, Harry Potter, Star Wars, you name it, science fiction. And I'm also working as a Catholic priest in the Netherlands. And so I always love to talk about stories and to look at the parallels and where these stories come from and what inspired the writers. And of course, if I can, I will hopefully also be able to explain a few things about certain, you know, about mythology, about Christian stories that are very often part of the kind of the framework of our modern stories. And with fairy tales, the topic, the subject of this show and of Once Upon a Time, very often there are Christian elements in there. Now, of course, this is a show, a fan show about Once Upon a Time. And it's first and foremost a show where we talk about Once Upon a Time. This is not some kind of, you know, Catholic evangelization campaign to, you know, shove our faith down your throat, that kind of stuff. We don't like to do that. But what we want to do is to share with you the insights that I can give from the perspective of a philosopher and of a theologian, and hopefully that will just enhance your overall, you know, knowledge of the story and of the background of these fairy tales, and will enhance your appreciation of the stories and your enjoyment of the TV series. So that's kind of the way that we've been doing a lot of our shows, and we're going to try that also for Once Upon a Time. But we do understand that a lot of you might not be Catholic, might not even be Christian, and so perhaps you're a little bit apprehensive, like, all these Catholics talking about my TV show, I'm not sure if I want to listen to that. Just give it a try. We'll be very respectful. Don't worry about it. We're nice people. So first of all, this show, this TV show, Once Upon a Time, it's based on fairy tales. To me, it came as a total surprise. The TV station, the TV season had already started. We'd seen some old series being renewed, like Fringe, and I don't know, we've seen some new TV series like Pan Am. And then all of a sudden, a little bit late to the party, was this show. And I saw it by watching Twitter. And Damon Lindelof, which I've been following on Twitter since he did Lost. He was one of the main writers of Lost. I'm always following his tweets. And he said, tonight is the premiere of Once Upon a Time. And that was the only thing he tweeted. And I was like, what is that? And at first I thought it was a Western or something like that. It didn't click with me that it was about fairy tales. And it was much later that I discovered that this show, this TV show, was about fairy tales and fairy tales taking place in, you know, in real life or something like that. And I was immediately captivated by that idea. I thought it was extremely original. And just the fact that this show was is produced and is written by a number of people that made Lost into such a television phenomenon. And I was a huge Lost fan. I don't know about you, David, and you, Lisa. Have you been watching Lost?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we watched Lost. My husband and I, he was a bigger fan than I was, but I loved all of the... Just it made you think, and there were all these questions. You never knew what they were going to do next, and I just fell in love with it.
Yes, absolutely. And what about you, David? Have you watched Lost?
I've watched the first couple of seasons, and then unfortunately I got a little bit off track when I started doing my master's, and then by the time I started watching, all mm-hmm. my friends started spoiling it.
Oh,
sending
no.
spoilers.
Oh. Well, that's going to be the big advantage of this series. We're all new to this. We don't know what's going to happen, what they have in store. The only thing that we know, and this is brand new, is that ABC has already ordered the full season, so 22 episodes, which is extraordinary for a show that has just started. Normally, they just wait and see and look at the ratings, and then, you know, if it doesn't do well, they might move it to another date, another time slot, and then it either gets canceled or they might order a few episodes. But the success of this show has been so phenomenal. I mean, the retention rate of viewers has been incredible. I think almost 100%, which means that everyone who has seen the first episode has also watched the second episode, which is unheard of. And so apparently they are so excited about the success that they went ahead and just ordered a full season. So that's cool to know. We don't have to live with that anxiety of, is this just another show that we're going to invest time in and then it gets canceled and we'll never see how it ends. At least we know that there is going to be one full season, and I bet you that this show is going to get a second season. I can already tell that there's so much quality in this show that, and then with all the people involved, I think it's going to be great. All right. I'm still getting strange, weird noises. I think it's from your end, Lisa. Is there something with your headset, perhaps, that is in your hair?
I don't know. Not to touch it. Maybe I should put my hair up.
I don't know. You know, these headsets are very sensitive. So it's plastic and it picks up every little detail or sound. I just wanted to tell our listeners that we all hear these strange sounds. It's not you. It's not in your head. Hey, before we move to the analysis of the first episode of Once Upon a Time, I want to listen together to a short clip that I found on YouTube, which introduces the series. And it has a few interviews or fragments of interviews with some of the main characters of Once Upon a Time. I thought it was very interesting, and it just gives us an overall introduction to the series for those of us that are either new to it or need a little refresh.
Once Upon a Time is a reinvention of the fairy tales that we all know.
You're too late.
There's not many television shows that are epic in this kind of way.
You found me.
I will always find you.
Once Upon a Time is a show that puts two worlds together. Every storybook character is actually real and actually exists.
Rumpelstiltskin!
Snow White and Prince Charming!
I know why you're here.
The Queen has created a powerful curse.
I shall destroy your happiness if it is the last thing I do.
Time will stop and we will be trapped.
It shows the fantastical and the sometimes cruel narrative of classic stories.
Everything we love will be ripped from us while we suffer for all eternity. No more happy endings.
The Evil Queen can't live with seeing everyone happy.
I say we fight!
So she sends them to this other world.
Where are we going?
Somewhere horrible.
So we're all sent to this little town called Storybrooke, and we're stuck there forever.
What can we do?
That little child growing inside you, on its 28th birthday, the child will return. It's our only hope.
Emma, my character, she's dragged into this town that has very, very deep, dark secrets.
How long will you be with us?
Just a week.
Welcome to Storybrooke.
We have been cursed into forgetting who we are, so our journey will be to rediscover who we are.
It's a story about families and being separated and being taken away from your identity.
They don't remember who they are.
Once Upon a Time was created by Edward Kitsis and Adam Horowitz, who were instrumental to the creative success of Lost. Our story is being told in a very similar way.
There was a lot of special effects done, and they look amazing. And they film on green screen, but at the same time on a computer, they're building the scene around you as you're shooting.
And if we protect her, we can win.
It's all about finding your identity, finding out who you are, where you belong. And it shows that in a hugely entertaining way.
I have faith.
Life isn't always what we expect it to be. But if you have hope, and if you have belief in something greater than yourself, that you can move past some of those adversities.
Even the possibility of a happy ending is a very powerful thing.
Every week they will learn how these fairy tale characters became these fairy tale characters and what would happen if they were in these really relatable real life situations.
I will destroy you if it is the last thing I do.
It has begun.
It will be full of wonder. It will be full of drama.
She will be the savior.
Hope and love, action, adventure.
It's here!
You will never know what's coming next.
This is my happy ending.
It has something for everybody, for the whole family to watch.
They're not fairy tales. They're true.
It's not to be missed.
You're going to lose.
You enjoy your stay.
Once Upon a Time, they are not fairy tales, they're true. I think that might be the secret of this series and why it has such a broad appeal, because I think what it does really well is to convey that this is not just about children's tales, about fairy tales. Ultimately, I think what these stories show us and what they share is these big questions that we all have in our lives, you know, about relationships and why are we here and what, who am I really? Who am I supposed to be? Who can I be? It's full of, you know, our aspirations and desires. And that has always been the fabric, I think, of fairy tales. And it's so cool to see that in such a great production, because I don't know about you, but I was blown away by the first pilot episode. I was like, this looks like a movie. And it's incredible how far we've come with green screen technology and CGI. It just looks gorgeous. But I have to be honest, when I saw the first trailer, like the teaser trailer, I thought the whole story would be in fairy tale land. I thought it was just kind of a realistic version of Shrek or something like that. But I just totally missed that part of the story would take place in our reality, which I think is actually the better part of the story. So let's go ahead and take a look at what happens in the pilot episode. We are introduced to a little boy. Is that the first thing that we see? Or does it? No, it starts with the seven dwarfs.
Yeah.
And a prince who is on a horse, and he arrives, and there are the seven dwarfs mourning about Snow White, who's dead, and in a glass casket, and they tell him basically, "You're too late." But he opens the thing. What is it? The casket. Yeah. Kisses Snow White, and of course, immediately she wakes up, and she is alive, and then we get the first promise in the series. There are a lot of promises and prophecies and things that you know are going to have some kind of sequel later on in the story. And here the prince promises that he will always find her, no matter what happens. So in him is this desire to always find Snow White. And then the next scene, they are in this beautiful kind of, well, it's a fairy tale version, I think, of a chapel or something like that. And there's a religious ceremony. There's some kind of fairy tale version of a bishop, I think.
I'd say it looked like a bishop.
Well, of course, it's a fairy tale. So why have a normal priest if you can get a true bishop? Mm-hmm. And so they marry and everybody applauds. And then the party is spoiled by the arrival of the evil queen. And I thought that her intro was just classic fairy tale material. It just looked like a scene from any Disney movie where the evil queen, she's all dressed in black and she makes this huge entrance with a lot of fireworks. And for some reason, which we don't really learn at first, she has a grudge against Snow White. And she pledges to spoil not just the party, but basically the future of everyone present. She makes a vow to destroy everyone's happiness if it's the last thing that she does. And at the time, we don't know exactly what that will entail, but it sounds very menacing and very fitting for an evil queen. And but of course, the Prince Charming, and we don't know exactly where he comes from or whether, you know, he has a mom and dad that are, you know, the true king and queen of fairy tale land or whatever. But he doesn't accept her authority. And even tries to kill her by hurling his sword towards her. But she just disappears in a puff of black smoke and disappears. And I was like, that black smoke, is that a reference to the smoke monster in Lost? Or is that just me? And I'm very,
I heard there were going to be several Lost references, but I didn't catch them yet.
I'm pretty sure there are actually a few jokes in there as well. We'll get to that later on in when we go through our notes. But there are a few inside jokes there for the people that love that kind of stuff. And Lost, by the way, too, had a lot of these hidden references. And it was, I noticed in the way that they filmed this that they tried to do the same thing. There are these tiny little details. They don't dwell on it. They don't explain it. But it's there, and you're like, they did that on purpose. And so what we're going to try to do with this show, which is called The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, is to try to find those secrets, those nuggets, those little, you know, clouds of pixie dust there that we might glance over at first viewing. So we then switch, very surprisingly, at least to me it came as a total surprise because I didn't see it coming, to... Is it Boston?
Boston. It's Boston.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Now, do you think it's truly Boston, or is it just Los Angeles with a little bit of computer graphics?
I'd say it's filmed in Vancouver, so it's probably somewhere even.
Oh my goodness!
Closer up there.
It's Canada. Uh-huh. It's in Canada. Wow! I didn't know that. How wonderful. Well, anyway, so Henry is in what looks like Boston. He's a young boy, and he has a credit card, and he is going to see Emma. And Emma is this lady that is, I think her job is basically to hunt down people that are late with payments or something like that.
She's what's called a bounty hunter. I don't know what the term, if there's a similar term in the Netherlands, but someone can post a bond while mm-hmm. they're waiting trial, so they can walk around free. But if they if they run for it before their court and they miss their court date, then she's one of the people who catches them.
And then gets a reward.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But when I think bounty hunter, and again, that's because I'm a sci-fi Star Wars nut, I think of Boba Fett.
Right. Boba Fett.
But so she's kind of a female Boba Fett and hunts down people, and she's very good at it because she when we first see her, she is we think that she has like a blind date with a guy, and then she happens to know everything about him, including the fact that he needs to pay, and he runs away, and she hunts him down and knocks him out, and it's a pretty tough introduction. For you know, this kind of shows you this is not your run-of-the-mill fairy tale where all the men are heroic and all the women are, you know, damsels in distress. This is clearly a woman that is fully in control of her destiny. But as much as she is in control, she's also very lonely. And we see that in the next scene where she returns to her apartment and it's her birthday. And she lights a cupcake and closes her eyes, and then, of course, we all know that she's making a wish. We just don't know exactly what she's wishing for. But at that moment, the doorbell rings, and this boy, Henry, steps in and tells her, "You're my mom. And didn't you have a son that you gave away, 10 years ago when she was, I guess, 18, because this is her 28th birthday." And, of course, that is so improbable. Even the fact that this young boy is on his own and has all this money to pay for a cab and knows exactly where he goes. There is something really weird about this boy. And so, of course, Emma, too, she's like, "Yeah, whatever. where are your parents?" And he goes on and on about about fairy tales and, you know, "You have to come to me to Storybrook. That's where you belong, and you don't belong here." And strangely enough, she agrees to go with him to Storybrook and to bring him back to his parents. So she clearly feels a little bit, you know, I don't know, guilty or at least worried about the boy. I guess any adult would do that. I was like, gosh, this boy in the middle of Boston, it's night. You got to bring back that kid. But I would call the police. I don't know. We don't see that.
Didn't she say she was going to, and he threatened?
Oh,
right. He said that she kidnapped him or something.
Oh yeah, that's what he would claim. Right. That's it. Oh my goodness, that's a smart boy. By the way, I thought the boy did really well as the actor. I was very surprised. And sometimes with kids, it can either make or break a movie or a TV series, and sometimes, you know, kids are just plain annoying in TV shows. I mean, I've been watching that other show with the dinosaurs on Fox.
Terra Nova.
And it could be me, but I'm just so annoyed by the kids in that series because they're not really acting that well. But this boy is very natural, I think, in the way that he acts. And he's called Jared Gilmore, the actor. And he's only been, well, actually, it's pretty impressive. I'm looking at IMDb, and he's been in lots of TV shows. Oh, my goodness. He's been in Hawthorne. He's been in plenty of episodes of Mad Men, which is that series about the 60s. He's been in Wilfred, Man of a Certain Age, and now he's been contracted for a lot of episodes here in Once Upon a Time. It's quite a gamble, I think, that they took by giving one of the main roles to a kid, basically. But he's doing a good job. And then we're back to fairy tale world. I don't know. I don't think that world has a real name, does it? Well, at least I can't remember.
They haven't mentioned it before. They just mentioned it as, you know, being before the curse.
Right. Yes, but because it's actually the past that we're. This is a flashback that we see. Everything that takes place there. And this is when the world was still right and before the curse came into effect. So in a way, these flashbacks, very similar in terms of narrative pacing to what we saw in Lost, where every episode would have these flashbacks, and then the flashbacks would actually tell you why people acted the way they did. So they gave you insight into character. So I hope that we'll see a lot of those flashbacks here in the same style, that we will learn why people act the way they act. Because even the evil people in the story always have a motive to act the way they do. So, for instance, this queen, my first question was, why is she so mad at Snow White? What happened? We don't know. She's not just evil because she likes to be evil. There has to be an ulterior motive to this, or some grudge, or I don't know. And so in fairy tales, they rarely explore that. It's always very black and white. The good people are good. The bad people are just bad because they're bad. And that's about it. In this TV show, I think that we're going to see a lot more gray area or nuances to the background of these characters, which of course makes it more interesting. So I don't know what the deal is with the queen. I somehow think that we'll discover this pretty late in the first season, what really happened. Anyway, Snow White and Prince Charming are in distress. They're married now. Snow White is pregnant, but they are afraid ever since that curse. And so they want to talk to someone in prison who, according to Snow White, is able to tell them the future. And his name is, I've got to pronounce this right, Rumpelstiltskin. Is that how you pronounce it? Rumpelstiltskin?
Got it. Yes. Got it exactly.
Oh, my goodness. And he is also played by a very well-known character, at least for sci-fi fans. They immediately recognize the guy from Stargate Universe. He's one of the main characters there. And he plays this kind of, you don't know if he's a good guy or a bad guy, but he does lots of bad things. And I thought I had his IMDb page opened, but I, for some reason, closed it again. Anyway, the guy from Stargate Universe. And so Rumpelstiltskin is, that's actually a pretty well-known fairy tale character. For those of you that don't remember the story, I'll try to recap it briefly. It's a character from a German fairy tale, which was also narrated by the Brothers Grimm. And the Brothers Grimm didn't write all the fairy tales themselves. They were collectors. They just, you know, took stories from various cultures, and most of them Nordic, and retold the stories and published them in their books. And this story was published in 1812 in Children's and Household Tales. Now, this could be interesting to just explore a little bit this character of Rumpelstiltskin, because it might give us some clues as to what his part in the story is and or what it could be. And it might shed some light on the conversation that they have in prison, where Rumpelstiltskin, Mr. R, is it promises to tell them what's going on and what's going to happen if they reveal the name of the child to him. And they had been warned by one of the prison guards that, you know, they shouldn't tell them their names, because if he knows their names, he has somehow power over them. So that's kind of scary. And then, of course, the trade-off is that they tell him that their unborn child is going to be called Emma. They know that it's going to be a girl. I don't know how they know that in fairy tale world, because there are no scanners at the time, right?
It's a world where they have blue fairies, so I assume that assume that they know.
Of course. I forgot about blue fairies. That explains everything. Anyway, so they tell him she's going to be called Emma, and in return he tells them, well, there's going to be darkness all around, and you'll be in a different world. There will be no more happy endings. And your child, Emma, is going to be the savior. She's going to return to you at her 28th birthday, and she will save you all. I thought, very interesting, because we got another promise. We got another prophecy. And in this case, a prophecy, of course, with very strong kind of messianic undertones. Like, she's going to be the savior, but not yet. And when she's 28... when she's an adult, that's when she will come back. Where have we heard that before? Very similar to also biblical tales. For instance, Jesus, who is this child, and there's this prophecy to his parents that he is the son of God and he's a savior and he's the Messiah. But for a long time, he just lives in secret and nobody knows about him. And it's around, you know, when he's about 30, that's when he starts to appear. And actually, this whole, you know, salvation story begins. And so here we've got a very similar theme. But of course, the question is, what's this Rumpelstiltskin? What's he going to do now that he knows the name? We know from fairy tales that a trade is always worse than you think it is. Isn't that the kind of the thing? If you deal with the devil, it's always going to ask more than you think it does. And we see that in many fairy tales. Well, Rumpelstiltskin, the original story, is about a miller who wants to impress a king. And to impress the king, he tells him that his daughter can spin straw into gold. Now, the king is, of course, all excited, so he locks up the girl in a tower room and is like, here's your spinning wheel, just go make me some gold, and if you don't succeed, I'm going to kill you. He's a really nice king. And so, of course, she doesn't know how to do that. And then this Rumpelstiltskin creature appears in the room, and he is able to spin straw into gold. But he only does that in return at first for her necklace, and then the following night for her ring. So there's, again, it's the same kind of trade-off. And then on the third night, she doesn't have any jewelry anymore to give him. He promises to spin straw into gold for the promise that the girl's firstborn child will become his. Tum tum tum. So of course that is, and she is like, yeah, I'm not even pregnant, so go ahead, no problem, just make me that gold. So the king is very impressed, and he's so impressed that he actually marries the girl. So at first he threatens to kill the girl because if she can't make gold, and then she's like, yeah, well, let's marry. I guess that too only happens in fairy tales.
They might have some couples counseling ahead of them.
Could very well be. Could very well be. Or you need a lot of blue fairies to make things right. I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
And then when their first child is born, of course, Rumpelstiltskin returns and he wants his payment. He wants the child. And then the queen is scared, so she offers him all the wealth that she has, if only she can keep the child. And then at first he doesn't want to agree with that. But then he's like, okay, I'll make you a deal. I will give up my claim to the child if you can guess my name in 3 days. And then, of course, she fails. But then they overhear Rumpelstiltskin at one point singing and dancing. He's so confident that he will get that child that he reveals his name in the song that he sings. And then so when he comes back the third day, she tells him his name, and so he loses his bargain. And so in the original story, he just runs away. He's very mad, very angry. In a revised edition, he gets so mad that he drives his right foot so far in the ground that it sinks up into his waist. And then in a passion, he seizes his left foot with both hands and tears himself in two. That's a version that never made it into a Disney movie for some reason. But
wow.
Yeah, imagine.
Yeah, I missed that one.
I guess that a lot of these fairy tales in their original version were not at all children's tales. They were moral tales. They were actually made up for adults to teach them a lesson. And so a lot of the Disney-fied versions that we have are, you know, just leave out all the gruesome details. And I think that this series, Once Upon a Time, is kind of trying to find middle ground. It's not Disney-like. It doesn't have the sugary coating of Disney. It does have a little bit of violence in there, but at the same time, it's still I think okay to watch this with older kids. I don't know, Elisa, what's your take on this series? Would you watch this with kids, or does it depend?
I would say my oldest is about to turn 10. So she we don't watch it with them. But I was thinking, you know, my nieces or somebody else who's preteen, teen, I think that from what I've seen so far, I think that they could watch it. And it, I think it might be, you know, might be interesting to them with the jumping back and forth. It might be hard for the younger to keep up with. Yeah. That would be the only thing. I think anyone lower than, 14, 15 would probably not really be able to follow it.
Right.
But I think it would be nice to be able to watch it mm-hmm. with your child and, you know, rather than all the reality stuff that's on TV and have those conversations yes. and think about it and talk about it. It just opens up another avenue to connect with them.
The other day I posted something on my Facebook page and I asked if people were watching the series. And actually a lot of people told me that they were watching this with their teenage kids. And I think the demographics in the ratings show that's actually an age group that does watch this series. I think it's aired on, 8 o'clock on the East Coast and then even earlier on the West Coast. So
it's 7 o'clock for us here in Central.
Yeah.
Which right. is family viewing time. Yeah. So
that's good. And I think there's material both for teens, for young, for kids, perhaps not the younger kids, but there's definitely also a lot in there for adults to enjoy. Mm-hmm. And in a way, that's what fairy tales do. I mean, they're very universal. I can go to Disneyland with my nephews and I enjoy it just as much, if not more, than they do. Because we all grew up with these stories. So it's interesting if you look back at the original story of Rumpel, Mr. R. Rumpel, what's his name?
Rumpelstiltskin.
You know that they're probably going to take this story and do something with it. And so the fact that he now knows Emma's name and he has a claim on her, or at least he has power over her, that will probably be a major plot point later on, because they are going to meet in the future. In this life. So what's going to happen there? So the solution they have to actually escape the curse is a tree. There is this magic tree or mystical tree that they bring in. And they ask Geppetto, of course, the guy who created Pinocchio, to turn that into a wardrobe. And the wardrobe, according to the story, would protect at least one person. And at first, Prince Charming plans on putting his wife in there, his pregnant wife, getting two for the price of one. But then the baby is born earlier than they thought she would be born. And so they decide to put the baby in the wardrobe. But when they're trying to do that, some dark knights enter the palace. They are the queen's assistants. And there's a fierce sword fight. And Prince Charming manages to put his newborn baby in the tree, and he is killed, which was pretty shocking. I didn't see that coming. I was like, wow, this is a different fairy tale. Prince Charming's not supposed to die. When these dark knights open the wardrobe, the child is gone. Interesting symbolism there, especially that they keep calling it the wardrobe. I kept thinking, is this a reference to C.S. Lewis?
Yeah, I was thinking Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, too.
Me too. Like the wardrobe being a kind of a portal to a different world. Like in this case, it's a portal to the real world. In C.S. Lewis, it's a portal to the imaginary world or the fairy tale world. But I think it's a reference. I'm not sure. There might be other stories where you have a similar portal or something like that. But I just don't remember any fairy tale with a magic tree. Well, there are magic trees in fairy tales, but never trees that are functioning as a portal. The only other story that I thought of, and of course we got to keep in mind that this is a 2011 production, and so they will make references. They can make references to any story, basically, that preceded this TV series. I was thinking of Star Wars, actually. In The Empire Strikes Back, there's this scene where Luke Skywalker has to enter this tree. Remember that?
It's
on Dagobah. Dagobah, and it's part of his training, and he needs to go in the tree or through the... And so he enters, and that's where he meets Darth Vader, his biggest fear, and he has to face it. And then he decapitates Vader, and it, you know, the helmet opens, and it's his own face. And it's a very kind of psychological type of storyline there where, you know, it's all about confronting your fear, learning who you really are, learning, you know, that you're braver than you thought, et cetera, et cetera. So in a way, the tree here is also an entrance point to the real world, where at least Emma will have to face herself and will have to face that big question of her identity. Who is she really? And does she belong there in that world? Or is there another destiny for her? Is there another future for her waiting on the other side of the wardrobe? So I thought it was interesting, this whole portal idea. Another story, and this is alluded to, and I think this was on purpose. It's one of those details that are hidden in the first pilot episode. Remember, at one point, Emma is driving the car. I think she's trying to get away from Storybrooke, and then there's this wolf on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So she has to brake. And she hits a tree, and well, anyway, she passes out. And at that moment, the camera pans to the book, the storybook that is still on the front seat. Henry left it behind in the car, and the wind just turns the pages, and we see a few images. The final image will bring us to the next flashback scene, but just before that, you see a picture of Alice in Wonderland, and. Or yeah, it's Alice in Wonderland, I think. You see the Humpty Dumpty or something like that, or is it the Tea Party? I don't remember. But anyway, you see a scene, and it's like, Alice in Wonderland. That is actually exactly what Emma is. She is in the real world. She's walking around there, but she doesn't belong there. She's actually from a different reality. And isn't it, doesn't Alice in the story fall in a rabbit hole in between the roots of a tree?
Mm-hmm. She falls into the rabbit hole.
Yep.
Or is it just a rabbit hole? Or I was just wondering, is there a tree in there as well? Or is that just me kind of mixing things up here? I don't know.
It might be me. I'll have to look back. I remember, you know, she's sitting against a tree and the rabbit runs past her, and then pretty quickly after that she falls, you know, she follows him to a hole, and then
Okay, well, anyway, there is a tree involved in there as well. And we might talk about trees in one of the future episodes, because the trees play important roles in stories and also in this TV series. And there is a lot of symbolism attached to trees. But anyway, so the Emma is safe. And I started to understand it a little bit when I watched this. Like, oh, so Emma is the baby. And, you know, you start to put one and one together. And then she gets a tour of Storybrooke, and all the people that walk around there are actually from the fairy tale world, and they have just forgotten that they are fairy tale characters. And I, you know, the scene with the Jiminy Cricket, that put a smile on my face.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that was cool. Especially because he does play that role of Henry's conscience, you know. He tells him not to lie, and it's all the stuff that Jiminy Cricket also tells. But he's now, what is he? Is he a psychiatrist?
Yeah, like a psychiatrist.
Or a counselor or something like that. I thought it was brilliant, brilliant. And he even looked, you know, at one point it starts to drizzle, so he puts up his umbrella while it walks away. It's just one of those little details that I thought was just absolutely brilliant.
He even wears a little sweater vest with a jacket like Jiminy Cricket.
Yes.
And they it's like they got it down perfectly with him.
I loved it. And we also see his fairy tale counterpart, where he actually is a cricket. And he warns them not to go to war. Actually, Prince Charming is all about, let's go fight, you know, let's fight the queen. And Jiminy Cricket is like, well, you know, if you fight, you will give in to the dark side. Again, very Star Wars-like reference. I can't help. But
of course, that's almost exactly what he says when he's a human, or human to Henry.
Oh, is that so?
When Emma first meets Archie, mm-hmm. She finds out that he's Henry's therapist, and he says that the kid says he's going on a field trip, and that's when Archie says, "Don't give in to your dark side," et cetera, et cetera. And then pretty quickly after that, they go back into the past, and then the grasshopper says the same thing.
Oh, wow. I missed that. That is so cool. Of course, the tour of Storybrooke ends at Henry's house, and he turns out to be the adopted son of the mayor. And the mayor it's a female mayor. She's called Regina Mills. A very funny take. All these names actually are plays on their fairy tale names, because Regina in Latin means queen. You know, Regina Caeli, it's the queen of heavens. And Mills, that might be a reference to, I don't know, the story of Mr. R. Rumpel, Dimple, Dinkle, Dinkle, whatever.
Rumpelstiltskin.
I was wondering, there is a guy also with the evil queen, or with the Regina Mills, and it's Sheriff Graham. But I was like, who is he? Is he also a character from a fairy tale? Or I just couldn't really put it together or find out who he is. Do you have any theories about who he might be? Or
my only guess would have been like the woodsman or something like that, because he's good. He says he's good about pounding the pavement and, you know, tracking and things, but we have no other insights whatsoever.
That could be. That's an interesting theory.
We don't know also which fairy tales they're going to pull from.
Yes.
So how many are there, and which, you know, they keep. I'm assuming they're going to keep expanding, you know, the fairy tales. So I kept thinking about Robin Hood, which I know was not a fairy tale, really.
Yeah.
You know, the Sheriff of Nottingham. That's what I kept thinking of. But
interesting. Well, but that's not really a fairy tale.
No,
I don't know. It's
This is the writers of Lost. Let's not put anything past them.
Yes, that's true.
You don't know where they're going.
I love the detail of Regina inviting Emma for a glass of apple cider. That was brilliant. Like, don't drink the apple cider. Yes, and did you notice that there's a mirror in her living room? That, like, this beautiful oval mirror. I was like, yeah, that of course is her mirror on the wall. It's just, I love those details. I was also wondering about the wolf that stops the car, whether that is from a story or from a fairy tale. But I don't remember. Anyway, but wolves too kind of seem to fit. It's a mysterious creature, always as an ominous sign. And so perhaps that is the symbolic function of the wolf here. So Emma is getting into trouble, but then she's bailed out. They meet Henry's teacher. He was called Mary Margaret, and she is a school teacher. Now, I was wondering, is she a nun, or has she a religious function or not? She has this little cross on her shirt, and in some of the recaps, she's called Sister Mary. So I was wondering, is she from a convent or something, or did you pick up on that, or?
Well,
I didn't.
Okay.
I think we kind of pick up on it. They go into more detail in the later episodes, but
yes.
They don't really talk about it much here.
No, they don't explain it really. But anyway, she's this very shy teacher, but really cares for Henry and is very adamant that Henry should be able to keep his imaginary world, that it's good for him. And she actually has a few really, I think, great one-liners in this episode, where it's all about hope. Her whole attitude is, well, if we take away the stories, we take away hope. We take away this whole notion of true love, of happy endings, and that is a very powerful thing. So you should be careful to take it away. And she also says something really interesting about the function of stories. And I felt that this was going beyond her own dialogue here or her own lines as an actress. This is probably a statement by the writers themselves. I think it's part of what they want to do with this particular TV series. She says at one point to Emma, stories help. They are a way to deal with our world. Our world doesn't always make sense, but these stories help us make sense of the world. And I thought that was a very profound thing and very true. Why do we tell stories? Why do we love stories? And why do all the good stories always have the same themes in them? It's because stories are a mirror for us. They help us reflect upon the things in our own life, in our real life. And the stories give us ideas on how to resolve problems or what the choices are that we need to make. And stories, fairy tales specifically, are always very black and white, just to make things more clear by exaggerating certain choices. And so I believe that is a very, very important statement here, that stories are necessary to deal with our world. They help us make the right decisions, and they give us hope, because a story has an ending, whereas our lives not necessarily have the definitive ending yet. We're still kind of in the middle of our own story of life, isn't it? And so we hope that there will be a happy ending to our lives as well. That's what we strive towards. That's what we hope for. But in order to get to that happy ending, it will depend on the choices that we make. And so these stories, since the fairy tale stories usually have a happy ending, they give us hope that our lives, the story of our lives, may also have a happy ending. Am I preaching too much, by the way? Just press the button. I'll shut up. But anyway, I love that part. There is also a very significant talk between Emma and Henry. I keep forgetting his name. Because the both of them feel that they have been abandoned. Emma has never known her parents. She thinks that her parents left her on the side of the road. But according to Henry, that was just her transition through the wardrobe, the magic tree. But he empathizes with her because he too feels abandoned, and he has an evil stepmother, very, very, you know, fairy tale like. And so he feels very much alone as well. But now he has found Emma. She is his true mom, and she will make everything right. So he has an unconditional belief in Emma that she's going to fix everything. She is going to bring back the happy endings. Whereas Emma herself, I don't think that she's convinced at all that she has that role to play. But over time, she discovers her vocation. It's almost like, again, in biblical stories, where sometimes the prophet doesn't want to be a prophet at first, and it just takes time to get used to that idea that is your role to play. That is your vocation in life. And it's not very clear at the beginning. Let's see. I think we need to wrap up this first recap. Was this pilot episode longer than the other episodes, or was there just more story material in here?
I think it was just an hour, but I think that they just packed so much development into that hour. And for me and my husband, we had us just on our edge of our seats because we had no idea what to expect. And they just spun it in such a way that you just wanted to know what was next. What are they going to do with this?
Yes.
Going back and forth, and I don't know. It was so different and creative. It just was intriguing.
And what I loved is every time that the show goes into a commercial break, there is a cliffhanger. There's like, oh, what happened? And that too, I love that. I love TV series that keep me guessing and keep me want to come back for more. And this series definitely does that right from the get-go.
They did a good job with the kind of the lead in for the next week, because you think, what next? And then they show you a little bit and you think, oh, okay, now I have to watch it next week.
Indeed.
To see what character they're going to explain and go forward.
Yes, because the ending is actually, well, we've seen the death of Prince Charming in the fairy tale world, and Snow White tries to kiss him awaken him, and it doesn't work. So it's a sign that the curse is now in effect, because there's no happy ending there. The regular tools that the fairy tale characters have to bring about happiness, they don't work anymore. It's broken. and the evil queen, and she's probably an evil witch, she's like, well, this is my happy ending. And so scary. And then I think it's Snow White who replies, well, you are going to lose. Good will always win. And then the queen is, well, we'll see about that. Mm-hmm. And of course, from the fairy tale perspective, of course, good will always win. But the fairy tale world is now broken. I'm tempted to start another philosophical, theological discussion here. But where have we heard that before, of a perfect world that got broken? And from that moment on, there's nothing that really works. There's no pure happiness anymore. And happiness becomes almost something to strive for. You have to fight for it. You have to work for it. It's the same story that Genesis, the book of Genesis, tells in the first book of the Bible, which is this wonderful story about two people that live in an amazing world, which is depicted as a big garden. And there are two trees in there, you know, talking about trees and fruits and everything. It's all there as well. And then they make the wrong choice. They betray the confidence that God put in them, and they want to be equal to God. And at that moment, it's as if there is this huge crack in the mirror, and this paradise just shatters. And their future is a grim future where there's lots of pain and suffering, and at least from the get-go, not a guarantee of a happy ending. And that is that. So I hope that I can make this clear. And I don't believe that I'm stretching this, or that I'm trying to, you know, be theological for theology's sake. I do believe that this is such a fundamental story in the cultural history of at least of Europe, where most of the fairy tales come from, that this has also influenced a lot of these fairy tales. And I think that in this TV series, we see lots of references to that ancient story of a broken world that needs healing, that needs to be fixed, that needs to be saved. And so you need a savior, you need a fixer. And what does Henry constantly tell Emma? You're going to fix the problems. So there you go. I will say no more. To me, it's pretty obvious what the inspiration was for a lot of the underlying stories here. So the prince dies in the fairy tale world, but we see him in the hospital in the real world. And what's the name of the teacher again? I forgot.
Mary Margaret.
Oh, Mary Margaret. She's a volunteer in the hospital, and so she takes care of him. And of course, we can dream that that will soon become a romance, because it's a little bit too obvious that they are reunited in the real world. But he's in a coma, so he lives, and that's it. That's a good thing. And then there's this other scene at the end where Emma decides to stay in Storybrooke, and she checks into Granny's bed and breakfast. And I was like, what does that refer to? And who is that? She has that strange girl that with the red and black hair running around. And
yep. Little Red Riding Hood. Mm-hmm.
Do you think so?
I think so.
Little Red Riding Hood and Grandma.
Oh my God, yep. Of course. Right. Oh, I didn't see that. Oh, my goodness. It was right under my
grandma's
nose.
Grandma's talking about her health.
Oh, gee. Oh, of course. Oh, I cannot believe I missed
that. And that's when we talked about the wolf. And then we saw Little Red Riding Hood afterwards. I don't know if that was part of that on purpose.
Could very well. Well, the wolf is actually the cause that Emma ends up with Little Red Riding Hood and her grandmother. So that might actually be it. That might explain the wolf. I think that's it. That must be it. Anyway, could very well be that our listeners have different theories, and we want to invite you to let us know. We want to actively involve our listeners in the speculation about the story. So if you have any additional ideas, or if there are things that we got wrong, let us know. And the easiest way to give us feedback is actually via Twitter. We have a Twitter account that you can follow. And then you can just send us little messages, you know. And the name of the Twitter account is Once Upon a Time PC. And PC stands for podcast. So it's Once Upon a Time PC. I couldn't make it any longer because Twitter only has like 14 or 15 characters. But so follow us on Twitter, Once Upon a Time PC, and let us know your theories about the wolf, about the stories, about what you think is going to happen. We'd love to hear from you. And then, of course, it feels like a movie. The first episode, the pilot episode, ends with the clock in the real world, which was stuck. Time stood still. There was no future, basically. I think that's what this clock symbolized. There's no future for these fairy tale characters. They're stuck in time. It starts moving again the moment that Emma enters the town. And that means, I think, it symbolizes that there is a new future. It's not over and done. The evil queen might actually not win. So here's hoping. Anyway, I think that kind of wraps it up nicely, I think, for this first episode. This was a longer show than I anticipated. We will be back soon with more analysis of the second and the third TV show. And then, of course, we hope to include a little bit more feedback from you people, our listeners. And if you have a little bit of time, I would invite you to go over to our iTunes page and write a rating, write a review. You know, you can just leave us a few phrases, some feedback, or if you don't have time to do that, at least click on the stars. And of course, we hope that you will give it 5 stars because that will bump up the show in the overall iTunes ratings. And we're a very new show, so we need you to spread the word about the podcast. Let us know bump against the microphone here. How unprofessional. We invite your comments. We'll open an email address soon, but for now, just follow us on Twitter. David, where can people follow you on Twitter? Are you on Twitter?
Yeah, my Twitter handle is just my name, David Handlos.
David Handlos. That's Handlos.
Correct.
And Lisa, are you on Twitter?
I am. I'm at Sound Mind Spirit.
Sound Mind Spirit.
Sound Mind Spirit, yes.
Excellent.
Yours is catchier.
Yeah.
It's very good. I'm also on Twitter. My Twitter name is Father Roderick, if you want to follow me. And you can find more shows like this if you like this and you're watching, I don't know, Pan Am on TV, or you are a fan of Harry Potter. We have shows about those series as well, and many others. And you can find them all in the menu on our main website, which is SQPN. It's stands for Star Quest Production Network. So sqpn.com. And if you follow SQPN on Twitter, we'll keep you up to date about those shows as well. Well, I think I've said enough. It's time to wrap up the show. Thank you for listening. And we will see you soon, someday, once upon a time.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.